Well, first, I want to thank you all for braving the great storm of 2016. We may be stuck here for a while. I might as well preach for an hour or two because you're not going anywhere. Make yourself comfortable and pray for the nursery workers. Oh, every now and then, my friends, we kind of get off our topic, off the lectionary passages, and we do some more topical kind of sermons, do some teachings, do some exploration. Gets a little bit nerdy, gets a little bit heady, and it maybe at times gets a little bit, contentious. And today might be one of those times. Because my reason for choosing this passage and this topic today is because my parents have come all the way from Ohio for Paxton's birthday, which was yesterday, and I want them to come and hear a message that is very contentious and to leave this place saying, "What did you do to my son? Y'all turned him into some raging liberal, right?" Yeah. Of course, they don't say y'all. We say y'all. That is not my purpose for doing this topic today, but just know it is a bit of a contentious issue. I will challenge you a bit, maybe push you a little bit in a non-violent way, but it's one of those things that it's okay to disagree with me. What I'm going to do today is walk through a difficult concept, throw out some ideas, and say this is why I believe what I believe. And I'm going to do something you don't often hear from sermons and people teaching on Bible. I'm going to say why other people believe what they believe. And I'm going to say maybe they've got a point in believing what they believe. But I think my belief is better, right? That's what we do. There's a reason I believe what I believe, because I believe what I believe is better than what you believe. Do you believe that? I believe I'm stalling to get away. Now, the reason we are talking about this today is multiple reasons. Multiple reasons for discussing gun violence. And one of those reasons is that this weekend is Martin Luther King Jr. His birthday was actually on Friday. The weekend we celebrate Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And Martin Luther King Jr. was an advocate for nonviolent change. He wanted to see the world change, but he wanted to bring about these changes using the methods of Jesus. So I respect that and want to lift him up as an example today. The other reason for talking about gun control and gun violence in the United States today is that recently President Obama enacted some laws, some changes. And I know there's some questions and some issues that have been kind of circulating about that whole ordeal. Some people are having problems with the way it came about. I'm not hearing many people question the proposal, the things that he said and enacted. But we want to talk about that a little bit this morning as well. And just really the reason I want to discuss this is actually another reason, too, is that this Sunday is designated as Sanctity of Human Life Sunday. And gun violence actually shows the opposite of a sanctity, a reverence for human life. But ultimately, the reason I want to discuss this topic today is because I am sick and tired of hearing the phrase mass killings. I am tired of opening my newspaper electronically and seeing these headlines that say mass killing in this state or this school or this part of the country, this city, this town. I am sick and tired of hearing about it. But there's good news. And then when we talk about things in a sermon kind of setting, we always want to move to the good news. And that is the bad news, that there's so much of this in our world today. But the good news is we can do something about it. And more so, we are called as followers of Jesus, the Prince of Peace, to do something about it. And it starts with us making decisions, choosing to follow Jesus, the Prince of Peace. So I start today with my normal greeting. Shalom, Havarim. Hello, friends. And you are indeed that. You are my friends, and I count you as friends. I am glad that you are here today. So now, as you, my friends, I'm going to make you uncomfortable. And again, as friends, we are welcome to disagree with each other. But when we start talking about nonviolence, there's three things that usually come up, three objections when people start saying that Jesus was a nonviolent person. And you've probably heard these before as well. The first thing people say is, didn't Jesus drive people out of the temple with a whip? The second thing they say is, what would you do if? And usually fill that in with, what would you do if you had a chance to shoot Hitler? What would you do if somebody broke into your home? And the third thing people usually do is they go and they say, well, didn't Jesus tell his disciples to sell their cloaks and buy a sword? Our passage for today. And I want to look at the first two really quickly, and we're going to spend some significant time looking at the third question there. The first one, and I'll just back up a second. We had some friends over yesterday to celebrate Paxton's birthday. His grandparents on Sonia's side were over, and they were in a Bible study just the other day, and they said that they were talking about concealed carry weapons in a Bible study lesson. And those people, she said, Sonia's mom said, they lifted up two of these questions. So these are very common things. I'm not just pulling these out of thin air. When you talk about nonviolence, these are the kinds of things that people question all the time. So the first one is, didn't Jesus drive people out of the temple with the whip? My answer is, probably not. There are several times when we have this story of Jesus turning over the money changers' tables and driving the animals out of the temple. It's the cleansing of the temple story. And that story can be read in two different ways. Literally, it says Jesus overturned the money changers' table and let the animals out and drove them out with a whip. Now, did Jesus drive the animals out with the whip? Or did he drive the people out with a whip? Thank you, son. You know what? I'm going to say that's possible. It is possible that when you read the text, that is one way you can interpret it, that Jesus drove people out with a whip. But if you look at the life of Jesus, it seems more consistent to say he probably drove the animals out with the whip. But even that doesn't seem like Jesus to me. But still, he was angry. We don't know what was going through his mind at that time. And I want to say, even if it was Jesus chasing the animals or the people out with a whip, that does not therefore justify me having an AK-47 assault rifle. You know, it's not one and the same. A whip is not a lethal kind of weapon unless you really, really, really whip somebody. I don't think Jesus killed anybody in the temple that day. So I get it why people would say that, but I'm not sure that I buy that question. And the next one, what would you do if? This is where I want to concede that this is probably the best argument against nonviolence that people use today. Because nowhere does Jesus say anything about defending anybody else in the New Testament. Jesus said plenty of times not to defend yourself. He talks about things like loving your enemy and not doing bad to those who wish to do bad to you. Consistently, Jesus does not speaks about not defending yourself, but he never says anything if somebody attacks your grandmother or your wife or your children. But when we have these kinds of discussions, and I don't mind the questions, you know, what would you do if you had a chance to shoot Hitler, or what if somebody broke into your house? But these kind of questions, they fall into a category known as casuistry. And that simply means taking a very unlikely event and building universal ethics upon that scenario. So God willing, none of us will ever have to defend our family against a violent intruder. And I'm pretty sure that none of us will ever have a chance to shoot Hitler. And I don't know what you would do in that situation. And to be honest, I don't know what I would do in that situation either. You cannot simply say, this is what I would do, because in that situation, you don't know how you would react. But the point that I want to make today quickly is that we cannot make universal declarations based on something that is very unlikely to happen. That is not a good ethical practice. And I think that Jesus' default mode was nonviolence. His teaching consistently reveals a nonviolence about him. Love your enemies. Do good to those who persecute you. Pray for those who would do ill to you. Jesus says not only to not kill somebody, he says don't even get angry at them. So can we at least agree today, this morning, that Jesus' default mode was nonviolence? What we would do in those extreme cases, I don't know. I can't say for myself. I can't say for you. Jesus' default mode was nonviolence, right? Can you say yes? Okay. You're not sure you want to agree, because where's he going to go? Okay, so what do you do about that third one? What do you do about today's lesson? Because this does not seem like the Prince of Peace. This does not seem like the guy that said, love your enemies. Did Jesus really say, sell your cloak and buy a sword? This is a passage that many have lifted up to use for self-defense or even aggressive attack of others, defending their country, defending their homes, whatever it might be. People use this as an example of why they can gather more guns, why they can have concealed carry permits to keep a gun on their self at all times. So I want to spend the rest of our morning here just kind of digging into this and seeing just what Jesus was trying to say. All right, so let's look at that passage again. Let's lift it up here and see what Jesus is saying. He said to them, that is Jesus, "But now if you have a purse, take it, and also a bag, and if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one." What? Really, Jesus? Let's situate what's going on here. He and his disciples, they're in the upper room. This has been the end of the Last Supper. They just have broken their bread. They've drank their wine. Judas has already left. He's gone out to betray Jesus, sitting around, and he has this conversation with his disciples. He brings back this memory. He says, "Do you remember that time I sent you out into the wilderness and you were supposed to preach the gospel? I sent you with no shoes, no extra purse, no money or anything. Did you lack anything?" They're like, "No, it was all good. We did fine." And then Jesus says, "Well, this time, this is what I want you to do. Sell your cloak and buy a sword." So many people, when you try to argue for a nonviolent Jesus, will lift this up and say, "Well, obviously Jesus wasn't nonviolent. Here he is trying to arm his disciples for battle. Arm them perhaps for self-defense." Now, I think there's a real danger to lift this one verse out of its context. You'll hear me say that time and time again. Context matters. So, of course, what I like to do whenever we have a challenging thing is to dig a little bit deeper and look at the Greek. Who's excited? We're going to do some Greek. All right. So, of course, there must be something about this word sword, right? In the Greek, it probably means something. Surely Jesus didn't mean what we think he meant. All right. The Greek word is makaira. Makaira. Everybody say makaira. And if you can't remember that, just remember, you know, makaira. You will never forget that. Makaira. Well, a makaira is a dagger. Okay, so it's not some big battle sword. It's not this large thing that you might carry around from place to place. This is the kind of dagger you might stick down in your waistband or inside your cloak in the first century. This is the equivalent of a concealed carry weapon in the first century. So it's not what the soldiers were carrying around on their hips, and it's not the kind of like a pocket knife that you might have. This is a little dagger. You know, I think Julius Caesar and Et tu, Brute, the kind of stabbing somebody, that is a makaira. Makaira. I keep saying it wrong. Makaira. That doesn't help, does it? That makes it worse. This is, my goodness, that didn't help at all. Okay, so let's broaden this passage a little bit and add a few more verses. And what I want to do is skip over verse 37 and come back to that in just a minute. Verse 38, the disciples respond to Jesus. They say, "See, Lord, here are two swords." "That's enough," he replied. Now, there's a couple different ways we can read this, and I think it's kind of fun to explore these avenues. Some people say that Jesus is saying that is sufficient. Those two swords are enough. Now, I want you to think about that for a little bit. If these disciples were being commissioned with some sort of a violent uprising, would two swords be enough? Okay, there's 12 disciples. One has left. Judas is gone. Including Jesus, there's 12 now still in that upper room. And they're going to do battle with whom? The Roman soldiers? The strongest military force on the earth at that time? And they have two little daggers? Now, is that enough? I don't think so. So surely that's not what Jesus is saying here. He's not saying that is sufficient. Now, maybe he's saying that's enough for self-defense. Maybe he's saying if we're walking down and we're afraid that somebody's going to jump us, to having two swords in a group of 12, that might be enough to defend yourself in such a situation. But let's jump ahead to verses 37 and 30. Verses 49 through 51. When Jesus' followers saw what was going to happen, they're in the Garden of Gethsemane. Judas has betrayed them. They said, "Look, Lord, should we strike with our swords?" They didn't wait for a reply. One of them struck the servant of the high priest, cutting off his right ear. But Jesus answered, "No more of this." And he touched the man's ear and healed him. In other Gospels, we have this story as well. And we know that that person that cut off the ear of the servant is Peter. And Jesus says, "Peter, put away your sword." Help me with this one. "For he who lives by the sword will die by the sword." You live by the sword using it for your own defense, but you will also die by that sword. I think you can make that argument that this could be used for self-defense, but I don't think that's what's going on here. So we look at that phrase where Jesus says, "That's enough." He may be saying that's sufficient, but I don't think that's the case. And there's another way to read that phrase, and I think it's kind of fun, and I've used this explanation before. I used to think it was the right one. And that is simply to look at it as Jesus saying, "Enough of this." Now, my children are now ages 6 and 3, and they think it's really fun to try to tickle Dad. And Dad is not ticklish. I'm not ticklish. But they don't. They're slow learners. I don't know where they get that. So they will like to, well, if I'm sitting on the couch or something, I've got my feet propped up, they come up, tickle, tickle, tickle. And it's like, that's not funny. Or they crawl on me and they try to tickle my ribs like I tickle theirs. And, you know, eventually it's just annoying. I'm trying to read or something like that. And I just say, "Enough. That's enough. Do something else, guys." It's not working. Or when they're doing something, I tell them over and over, "Don't do that." I say, "Don't fight. Don't wrestle." They keep fighting. They keep wrestling. I say, "That's enough. Go to your rooms. Do something else. Go outside and play. That's enough." That can be a sign of my frustration. Like, I've told you this time and time again, and you're still not getting the point. So some have said, this is Jesus saying, "That's enough. I've been telling you over and over again about this nonviolent way of resisting, this nonviolent way of being, and you are not getting it. When I'm talking about the sword here, I'm using it metaphorically. So you who has two swords, that's enough of this. You're not getting it." I say I used to hold that understanding, and I've used that before, but I think there's still something else going on here. Now let's go back, and we're going to look at verse 36 and 37 together. And this kind of got me thinking this week. He said to them, "But now if you have a purse, take it, and also a bag. And if you don't have a sword, sell your cloak and buy one. It is written, 'And he was numbered with the transgressors.' And I tell you that this must be fulfilled in me. Yes, what is written about me is reaching its fulfillment." These swords, I think Jesus is saying it is sufficient to fulfill prophecy. There's a prophecy about Jesus that we find in Isaiah 53. Isaiah 53 is one of the suffering servant passages that talks about the Messiah who is to come. And this passage says in Isaiah 53, verse 12, it says, "Therefore I will give him a portion among the great, and he will divide the spoils with the strong, because he has poured out his life unto death, and was numbered with the transgressors. For he bore the sin of many, and made intercession for the transgressors." Jesus isn't doing this because he wants the disciples to attack the Romans, or the religious people, or anybody else. He's not looking for a violent overthrow of the temple. I think that's pretty clear. Two swords is not enough for that. I don't think he is saying that they should have those swords for self-defense. I think it's possible he's saying that's enough, as in I'm frustrated and tired of explaining this to you over and over again. But I think what's clear here is Jesus is saying by them having those two swords, they are fulfilling a prophecy. And that prophecy says that the Messiah will be numbered with the transgressors. Them having two daggers, two concealed weapons, is enough to number them among the sinners, enough to number them among the lawless people of their time. Wow. So I want to start to get a little bit practical with this application. That's always our goal. We don't want to simply have head knowledge. We want to know, what does it mean to live this out? And I do believe that Jesus has called us to live in peace among each other. And I think that our news media outlets, they sometimes distort reality. I'm sorry if that offends anybody. You probably already knew this. Sometimes our news will present things because it is news, right? They want you to buy newspapers. They want you to watch their shows. That's how they get your attention. So they always have the most outlandish people on the news. You know, it's never, okay, say there's something that goes down in... Okay, say there was a fire, a hypothetical fire that took place in a housing complex. They're going to find the most inarticulate person to interview, like they did on Facebook this week. Did you hear that woman? What did she say? Nobody got time for a fire this day? It ain't going to happen here. They always find the person with the most outlandish, you know, vocabulary, the least articulate person. Always finding somebody on the extreme side of things to interview, because those people are, let's face it, they're interesting. So I always think that when we talk about guns and we hear people on the news talking about guns, you always find people on either extreme talking about them, when probably 90% of people are somewhere in the middle. And I think that there's some numbers that will show us just how closely we all agree or feel about certain issues. And this may bore you a little bit if you don't like stats, but I'm sorry. We're going to do it anyways. Pew Research, have you heard of Pew Research Group? It's a large national group. They do surveys all around the country. Pew Research did a number of researches on gun violence in the United States, and they found this. 85% of Americans support expanded background checks on handguns before you purchase one. Now, this is across political boundaries. This is Republicans and Democrats support background checks. And this is specifically geared towards things like purchasing handguns at gun shows. Now, if you went to a store today and you tried to buy a handgun, you would go through a background check. If you had some sort of violent offense on your record, you don't get a gun. Is that good? That's good, right? That's fair, right? But if you went to a gun show, those are not regulated in the same way. So you may have a serious offense on your background. You may have a warrant for your arrest out. You can still buy a gun. And there are more guns sold today online than in stores. And those are not regulated either. They're supposed to do background checks, but if it's just you and me going to sell a gun, you can buy a gun from me online. So 85% of Americans support expanded background checks. That seems like a good idea to me. 79% believe that people with certain mental illnesses should not be permitted to purchase firearms. And this is the kind of thing that says if you have some sort of documented illness where you want to hurt yourself or hurt others, that you can't buy a gun. Again, that seems like a good thing to me. And maybe this could have prevented some of the shootings at places like, you know, what is it, Sandy Hook Elementary School or Newtown, Connecticut. That is Newtown. Virginia Tech, Aurora, Colorado. Where people with mental handicaps, mental disabilities that have been documented, went and shot innocent people. Again, rather obvious to me. 70% of people support a national gun registry. Now, I hear about this one on the radio sometimes. People are like, oh, the government just wants to track our guns. They want to know where they are at all times. Yeah. Most gun violent gun interactions, most crimes committed with a gun are done with guns that are not owned by the person who originally bought them. So if I was to go and buy a gun and sell it online, that's the kind of gun that might be used. It's still registered in my name, but I no longer possess it. And the gun registry law simply says, even if you sell it to a different person, you have to let the government know so they know who that gun is registered to. Makes sense to me. Let's do one more. 57% support a ban on assault rifles. Now, here's the thing. I have no problem. I know a number of people here hunt. I have no problem if you have a gun and you go out and you shoot food for your own kitchen. If you shoot something humanely, you slaughter it, you eat it, that's fine. And I understand if you have a gun and you use it for home defense. I can understand that even if I don't fully agree with it. But I don't think that in either of those scenarios, you need a gun that can shoot 50 bullets in less than a minute. You don't need that, no. Now, if you are that bad of a shot, if you take an AK-47 out hunting, and you are that bad of a shot, maybe you should consider another hobby, right? Or there's that many deer right there. Please do something about it. To clear off that excessive population. No, no. We don't need clips that hold 30 rounds. We don't need to be able to unload that 30-round clip in less than a minute. I know it's fun to go out on a gun range and shoot those things. I don't mind. I enjoy shooting targets. That's fun for me. But if it means safety for kids at an elementary school or in a movie theater, I'm willing to give that up. Now, again, you might say this all sounds very liberal. It might sound very much like the left side of the whole political divide. But they broke this down a little bit further. And usually on this political divide, this so-called political divide, you have those people that are they want to be they want to take away all the guns, right? They want to limit the guns that people can have. And on the other side, there are these Second Amendment advocates. They're staunch believers that we should be able to have as much guns as we want. Well, one more number from the Pew Research. They say 82% of self-proclaimed Second Amendment advocates support expanded background checks. I mean, this is no-brainer stuff to me. And I think that we can do better. Now, every time a mass shooting takes place, we hear these arguments. This one side of the equation that says, well, we have a gun problem. And there's this other side that says, no, it's not a gun problem. That's not the issue. We have a human heart problem. We have a problem with people not appreciating the sanctity of life. And I hear these arguments going back and forth all the time. And I just want to say, why do we think it's an either or? I think it's a both and. I'll give you a few more numbers. Sorry about all the numbers today, but hopefully it'll make the point. In the United States, there are 10 gun deaths for every 100,000 people in the population. That is huge, folks. 10 for every 100,000. Now compare that to Japan. Japan has 0.07 gun deaths per year for every 100,000 people. And Japan has much stricter gun regulation than the United States does. Now compare that to Switzerland. Switzerland has 3.84 gun deaths per every 100,000 people. Switzerland has much looser gun laws than the United States. So Japan, much stricter. Switzerland, much tighter, much looser. I said it backwards. Japan, much stricter. Switzerland, much looser. Now, it's clear that there's a difference here. There is some difference. I think you can attribute some of that to the laws that there are. But when Switzerland has, what, a third of the gun deaths that the United States has, maybe there's something more. I think that we as a church have a responsibility to teach people about the sanctity of human life. Yes, we have a gun problem, but we also have a lack of reverence for human life. We need to lift up the same love for each and every person, regardless of who they are, what they've done, where they live, their color of skin, or their background. Because to God, each and every person has the same value and the same worth. We need to show people that you people sitting in the pews here today are precious. But the people sitting in prisons are precious as well. The people who live in penthouse apartments, those people are precious. The people living in the streets are precious as well. The people who work on Wall Street are precious. The people who work in brothels are precious. The people who killed Jesus are precious. The people for whom Jesus died are precious. We have a gun problem in the United States, but more so, we have a problem with our hearts. I want to close this morning with one story to kind of bring it all together. A story about a pastor in North Carolina named Larry Wilson. I think that was his name. Larry Wright, excuse me. Larry Wright is a pastor at a small church in North Carolina. And he was having a service on New Year's Eve because they were going to preach in the new year. And you think it's hard to stay awake at 10:30 on a Sunday morning? Imagine trying to stay awake at 11:30 on New Year's Eve during a sermon. So Larry Wright's having this New Year's Eve sermon. Then he's having the celebration. They're going to preach in the new year. He's standing up front, and all at once he sees a man come in the back door. And this man enters holding an assault rifle in one hand and a loaded clip in the other. He can see the shine off the bullet in the clip as he's standing up front, and this man walks down the aisle holding this assault rifle. As this man comes to the front, to the pulpit, Larry's up there, he's preaching, doing his thing, and he just says to the man, "Can I help you?" You know, because that's what you do, right? "Can I help you?" And the guy didn't know what to do. So he said, "Can you pray for me?" So that's what they did. They stopped right there, and everybody in the congregation got up. This man was holding his assault rifle. He sets it down. The people gather around him, lay hands on him, and they pray for him. And after a while, Larry's like, "Well, I got a sermon to finish. Would you like to sit and wait and listen to the rest of the sermon?" So the guy sits in the front row, because the front row is always empty. He has a seat there, and they preach in the new year. And just before the stroke of midnight, Larry has an altar call. And the first one to come forward is the would-be gunman. And right then and there, he names Jesus as his Lord and Savior. Now that's a beautiful story, I think, of how we can disarm people nonviolently by asking them questions, "Can I help you?" rather than jumping on them and seeking to do violence to them. And as amazing as that story is, it doesn't stop there. Because I saw an interview, CNN went 2 days later, so the next day was New Year's Day, they went the following day, they went to have this interview with Pastor Larry, and they're sitting in the congregation, probably in about the second pew. Many times there's an interview with a pastor, you always do it sitting in the pews. I don't know why that is, but that's what you do. So they're interviewing Pastor Larry right here, and they have a front door over here, and you can kind of see somebody come in the background as they're interviewing Pastor Larry, and he just kind of looks back to see who's there. He's like, "Oh, there he is now. That's the guy." So Pastor Larry just gets up in the middle of an interview with a national television program, gets up during this interview, walks over there, shakes this guy's hand, gives him a hug, and they have this conversation for several minutes. Larry comes back to this news anchor, and he's like, "Oh, that was the guy that walked in on New Year's Eve with the gun. He came to apologize and ask if there's any way he could help in the ministry of the church." My friends, I don't have all the answers. I have more questions than answers, I assure you of that. But I know that here in the United States, we do have a gun problem. And even more so, we have a heart problem. My prayer for us today is that we would be moved like Jesus, to see everyone with Jesus' eyes, to see people as people to love, people to bless, people to die for, rather than to take their life. Let's pray. Loving God, as we seek to do better as followers of your way, seek to be better disciples in this world, help us to continue to ask the difficult questions. And Lord, maybe we won't always agree on what everything means and every last detail and how we are to live these things out. But God, help us to do a little bit better every day. Help us to be continually reminded of ways exemplified for us, not only by your life, but people like Pastor Larry Wright, who disarm people not through violence, but through love, through questions, and through concerns. Help us, God, to seek to love you more and to love each other better. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.